And welcome to the Grace Hour Show, podcast coming to you live from Baltimore. We're talking about Daniel this week. We had a beginning yesterday in Daniel 1. Mm-hmm. Pastor Ronaldo Brown and myself, Pastor Steve Androlonis. We are talking about Daniel 2 today. And as we ended yesterday's program, we talked about dreams, because that's what we're getting into here, is a great dream and the interpretation of a dream that comes to the king. We're talking about the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. He is entering into a season of maybe one of the greatest, most controlling empires. It didn't last even 100 years. Mm-hmm. You know, this year, the United States will celebrate its 250th anniversary. That's
awesome.
1776 to 2026. So that's interesting. What do they call it? Sesquicentennial? I think that's what they call it. Sesquicentennial.
That sounds like a spice.
Something like that. Not bicentennial. It's sesquicentennial. It's
I'm going to have the rice with sesquicentennial.
You can look that up. I can be corrected. I don't even know how to spell that word. Anyway, but we are talking about Nebuchadnezzar, and he gets a vision in the night in his sleep. His sleep is disturbed by something. And he's a very crafty kind of king. Mm-hmm. He's going to see, he's going to see just how supernaturally connected his sorcerers, magicians, Chaldeans are. And he's going to learn that that group of people doesn't really have a view from heaven, but another one does.
Excellent.
Another group of guys do have a understanding of the God who made Nebuchadnezzar and even sat him on the throne that he is on. And so, Pastor Ronaldo, could you introduce Daniel 2 and how we're going to approach this?
Sure.
Because I don't know where you're going. No, I'm teasing. No, we have an idea, but let's go.
I like the way that chapter 1 sets up chapter 2. You can see God drop breadcrumbs all in chapter 1 to kind of prep your mind for chapter 2. And the verse I would look at in chapter 1 that really kicks my mind ready for chapter 2 is verse 17. Just the entire mindset of the conviction and the walk with God that Daniel and the three Hebrew boys have, that's the foundation. But in verse 17, it's written in Daniel, which says, and as for the four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. Now, the second part of the verse is crucial. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. In other words, what God gave Daniel, he didn't give the four children. Mm-hmm. And he got something special.
Yeah.
He got a unique, that's a good picture of us in the body of Christ. All of us are going to receive things from God, but then we're going to get something that's germane to our specific calling. And that little hint at the end of 17 comes to the front of the room right away in chapter 2. Because what do you have in chapter 2? Nebuchadnezzar's dreaming dreams. And the way I look at this and study this, it seems as if 2 happens relatively quickly after chapter 1.
Yeah, probably. Likely.
Bang, bang.
It seems like it.
Normally in the scriptures, when chapters are butted against each other, there's a passage of time. But it seems like this is like right away, bang, 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 which gives a lot of credence to verse 17. Like, okay, why did God give him this specific? He goes out of his way to say dreams and visions, because that's what's coming. I mean, when you read the rest of Daniel, it's a whole lot of dreams and a whole lot of visions that are coming, and God initiates all of them. It's not like people dreaming on their own or having visions. It's God giving these visions, and at every time, it's for a divine purpose, and we'll get into that in chapter 2. But then Nebuchadnezzar has several dreams. And by the way, do you know when you dream at night, you have at least 5 to 10 dreams lasting between 4 and 7 minutes. You have a lot of dreams. He's had a lot of dreams. But God made sure, even though he didn't remember the dream, God made sure he remembered that he dreamed, which is unusual. Usually, the only notification you have that you've had a dream is you remember some part of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wake up and say, I had a dream but didn't know what I dreamt. In this case, in this specific case, God made sure that he had a dream. He was aware that he had a dream, did not reveal the context, but he made sure that it troubled him. It stirred his spirit up that he wanted to know what the dream was about. And the environment that Nebuchadnezzar was raised in under his father before he took over for his father was a typical palestrial situation where there's a lot of hang-ons, a lot of wise men, a lot of counselors,
yeah.
a lot of officials, all giving you counsel. yeah. They all have jobs, and they got to job protect. So mm-hmm. how do I job protect? Well, I make myself useful. So okay, yeah, we're here. We're the soothsayers. I kind of get this idea like Nebuchadnezzar was cynical. It's like, yeah, you guys claim to be wise. Well, you know what? And it remains to be seen whether he remembers it or not. I believe he does. I believe God did that on purpose. But some think that he did know, but he was kind of like not – he wanted to prove all things. At any rate, he calls all these guys to interpret his dream. I like the way he does it. He does it in a way that he wants a supernatural event. He understands that something supernatural has happened in his life. So he wants a supernatural mm-hmm. response or solution for a supernatural problem, yeah. which speaks to the condition of man. Mm. Inside of us, there's something supernatural, something eternal. And that eternalness cries out for something eternal. Mm. And a lot of people can be cynical about life because they realize that these temporal things, as attractive as they are, they don't minister to that supernatural thing inside of me. And Nebuchadnezzar's having that same angst right there. He's having that same problem. So he says, okay, tell me what I dreamed as well as interpret it. And Nebuchadnezzar's not a dumb guy. He's a smart guy. He was an architect. He was an educator. He was a military man. He was pretty smart. He was sharp. He's one of the few times that a son took over for a father, and he was an able, capable leader. In fact, when you read it in the Old Testament, there's no pagan king who's more spoken about mm-hmm. than Nebuchadnezzar. God gives us a good glimpse of a pagan leader because I think he wants us to see a lot of us in Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
He's a great example for us, for the natural man.
Yeah. And he's saying, you got to tell me what I saw
yeah.
and what it means. I can't, yeah. you know, if I tell you what I saw, then you're just going to, you're going to spin it some way.
Here we go.
You know, and it's, it's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, maybe it goes back to this, this transition in the first chapter mm-hmm. where Daniel and the three Hebrew boys don't take the food and drink.
Uh-huh.
And then, you got these guys who are, like you said, hangers on, and they're figuring out, well, if he could just tell us, we could make something up.
Exactly.
We could have a huddle. We could say, let's tell him what we think it means. Cause,
right.
Like what he saw could be, mean more meat for us, more wine for us, that kind of thing. And you're right.
Yeah.
It is like, those kind of, you look at the entourages of mm-hmm. like anyone who has some sort of celebrity, mostly celebrity. It just seems like politicians have their hangers on too, but now it seems like celebrities are the ones
everybody.
Who have everybody like wants to follow the person who's so popular. Just get into the group and get yep. invited into the yep. the room where it happens. As what was that? Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton said that I want to be in the room where it happens. Even goes back to all of these political machinations. You got people who want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we where is it? It's in one of the, I think it's in 2 Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is in 2 Kings it happens, or maybe 1 Kings. It is like there's a bunch of guys who are telling the king everything he wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it is, I think it's Jehoshaphat that says, there's got to be a man of God who can enter. Because all these guys are telling you mm-hmm. exactly what you want to hear. One guy's making iron horns. You're going to gore these guys yeah. with this and everything like that. And Jehoshaphat saying, there's just too much agreement here.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
probably what Nebuchadnezzar, it says he's in his... he's been reigning for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably like, you're right. He's like, he's built like hanging palaces.
Mm-hmm.
He has an understanding of intelligence, and he's got sort of a intuition a little bit that, these guys always tell me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
And now I've seen something
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to tell them what I've seen
mm-hmm.
because if they are really sorcerers and magicians, they should already know.
Absolutely.
Like you know, whatever, Sister Agatha Beth down here on Pulaski Highway.
Okay.
You know, come on in and I'll tell you, right? I'll give you a reading, you know? She should already know.
Yeah.
You know the famous story, right? You know the famous story down here on Pulaski Highway. It was in a Homicide: Life on the Street. They did it. There used to be next to the Dunkin' Donuts down there. There used to be a house there and it was standing idle. And people asked me, why was it standing idle? Well, there was a fortune teller who was killed there. She didn't see it coming.
Oh.
And that was like the whole story in the Life on the Street. They played on that kind of thing. There was a guy, the famous comedian, Richard Balzer or something. He played one of the detectives and he said, yeah, she was not such a good fortune teller. She didn't see.
But
that house, after that happened, that house, because of the cosmic nature of what happened there, that house stayed empty until it was finally torn down about, I guess, 10 years ago. But it was there. I used to tell, when we go on outreach, I'd have to tell the story every now and then to the, see that house, guys, over there? This is a fortune teller died there. But, you know, this is like Nebuchadnezzar is sort of like wise to the whole game.
Yeah.
And just like, I think the witch at Endor that Saul came, she was so surprised that, I've made these magicians, I've made like sort of holograms, sort of like magic holograms, but I've never seen a real guy come up from the earth. And here comes Samuel. And I'm thinking she, you know, her heart dropped, you know.
This is not supposed to happen.
What are you doing? What's going on? This is not supposed to happen. Right. A guy really coming up from the ground to speak is not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, but he's testing them. He's testing them as a political leader. He wants to know that. But
there's a lot of fear there, I think, too. I think there's a lot of fear because whatever this is, like, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's an accomplished guy. He's used to success as well. So God allowed him to be so troubled.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more scary than being scared of what you don't know.
That's right.
The unknown. So this dream has got him. Mm-hmm. So I think, like I said, it's this unknown that's inside of him that he knows is supernatural. He needs to make sure he gets a supernatural solution. And in other words, I kind of feel like that with other things, he doesn't feel intimidated by the mysteries of other things in life. So he'll use these guys because these things are not so supernatural. So I can use these guys who are not so supernatural, who pretend to be supernatural. But this thing right here is beyond him. Mm-hmm. You get a sense like it's troubled him. It scared him. It's beyond him. And when you get something beyond you, you need a solution that's beyond you. And he read the room. None of these guys are beyond me. So until you give me a solution that's commensurate with the trouble and the supernatural nature of what's happened, you guys are in trouble.
Because
if I'm going to be this troubled, you should be troubled too. In fact, you're going to be killed. He says, okay, you're not even – don't just tell me sorcerers, magicians, and Chaldeans. Don't just tell me my dream. Interpret it and tell me. And and notice they asked for time. First they asked for a hint. That's the first – they asked for a hint. He said, no hints. Then he said, okay, give us time. No time.
No time.
No time. And by the way, that's going to come back later – because our dear friend Daniel's going to ask for the same thing, and he's going to get it.
That's right.
That's interesting. Right. That sometimes when you walk in the will of God, even in a trial, you're going to get things that others don't get.
Mm-hmm.
Not just wisdom. You're going to get open doors in trials that other folks may not get. Daniel asked and got it first try. These guys tried, and God's like, nope. Nebuchadnezzar's like, nope, not going to happen. Nope, 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 nope. And he was angry and furious. And when he describes in verse 12 his anger, it's a visible rage. Mm. I mean, he must have been jumping up and down, running around. He was all his rage. And I think that rage was fueled by fear, tremendous fear. There's nothing more angry than a scared person.
Yeah.
And he was fearful.
Yeah, now the beginning of the chapter says he had this dream, his spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. So he could be pretty much sleep deprived at this point. Like, I think you're right in interpreting, like, I have seen something that is so significant so significant that if I don't get the meaning of it, then, you know, I don't know if I can ever sleep again. Yeah, like, you know, cause you saw this and the last image is like this, this mountain smashing everything and becoming, the glorious mountain. Like you're like, and you're just wondering, is this going to happen in a time frame of weeks?
Right.
Months, years, you know, and he's, you know, and he can't get back to sleep. He's afraid to go back to sleep, it seems. So at a certain point, he's like, you're right, he's agitated. But I think the conviction that Daniel and the Hebrew boys showed in the first, first chapter, this is also going to give them some, you know, some measure of space here. So when Daniel speaks to the guy who's come to kill them, he's saying, why is the king's order so urgent? And he, you know, it says here, it says Daniel replied with prudence and discretion.
Beautiful.
And, you know, he declared, he said, why is the decree so urgent? And he made known, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time. Now, here you think, here it is. I'm thinking he probably went in, give me 3 days, you know, or something like that. Give me three, give me 3 days. He's not saying like he said, you know, and, you know, something, you know, something about the relationship that Daniel and these Hebrew boys had already established with the king gave them that 3 days. And, you know, we'll see that like going forward, reading the history of Israel, you know, what was it? It was, you know, I'm thinking in particular, Nehemiah. Nehemiah, you know, the king knew him so well that when he saw he was sad, he said, you've never had a face like this before. Tell me what's going on. And like, if you are serving in this place of, you know, so close to power, you should, and the king is noting your character, and he's noting Daniel's character. So when Arioch, this, you know, probably the executioner, when he goes back and he says, he's asked for some time, and Nebuchadnezzar is saying, okay, maybe Daniel I can trust, right?
I like what you said there. I'm going to piggyback what you said, because if you go back to chapter one, right after that, verse 17, verses 18, 19, and 20, there is a royal observation of these boys. So before we get to this situation, this crisis, the king examined them in verse 8. He requested them in verse 18. He kind of spent time with them in verse 19. And then he came to a conclusion about them in verse 20. And he somehow discerned these guys has something different than all these other guys. In fact, it says 10 times better than the magicians and the astrologers. So if they're 10 times better, when those guys ask for time, you don't get time because you're not that great. I just met some guys a few minutes ago who are way better. And then when one of those guys says, give me more time, on the virtue of that comparison, you don't get more time, but this guy is 10 times better. Okay, yeah, he's going to get some more time. It was prudent. I think they kind of earned that time.
They earned a reputation for trust.
Yeah, like, okay, normally I would say, no, I'm angry, but I'm not stupid. Okay, yes, you got some time, but not a lot of time.
Not a lot of time.
And what I like about, and this kind of segues into what's happening here at 6025 Moravian Park Drive this week, is that
the prayer.
Yes. What happens next is, what does Daniel do in a crisis with his life on the line? What does he do? First of all, he goes and communes with the body of Christ. He goes back to his people. He goes back to the three Hebrew boys. And then secondly, what do? They inquire of the Lord. They have a prayer meeting. Amazing. You lay it before the Lord. You take it to the Lord. You come to the Lord. We're doing the same thing here at 6025 Maria Park Drive this week on the property. We're praying throughout the day all week in preparation for Summer Harvest kickoff on the 22nd this Sunday.
Yep.
Our Sunday evening service is dedicated to missions and the Summer Harvest kickoff for Summer Harvest trips throughout the summer of 2026. You're invited to come down this Sunday evening at 6:30 and celebrate with us the vision that God has for our summer in 2026. But also, you're also invited throughout this week to pray with us for a variety of things, not just for souls, but for our lives and for our community and for our church, to come down and participate in corporate prayer. And this is what Daniel did. He was faced with the greatest crisis of his life at this moment, and he incorporated his fellows, right?
Yes.
And then he prayed. And he prayed unto God. He said he went to his house in verse 17, made the thing known to his companions. And that, and I love what verse 18 says, that they would desire the mercies of the God of heaven concerning the secret that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And look what happened in verse 19. In the middle of the prayer meeting at night, God gave him a vision and God answered his prayer.
Yeah, and then we see him entering into Thanksgiving.
There it is.
It's like he doesn't run right to Nebuchadnezzar. He blesses the God of heaven.
Beautiful.
And this is a great, you know, this is, you know, maybe he's singing this. You know, we know the Hebrews sang prayers and psalms. Blessed is the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. Look at that. He changes times and seasons, removes kings, sets up kings, gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to those who have understanding. It's amazing. This is all the deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise. That's me. You have given wisdom. You have given me wisdom and made known to me what we asked of you. So he got what he asked for.
Yes, he did.
He got what he asked for, and now we're going to tell to the king. Now let's go to the king.
Don't jump there yet.
All right, go ahead.
Verse 24, small little detail.
Yeah.
Small little detail. Before Daniel goes and prophesies about what happened in the dream and the interpretation, he goes back to Arioch.
Yeah.
He goes back to Arioch, and why does he do that? He goes back to Arioch to make sure nothing's been done in haste. He cares. Daniel cares. He's like, he could just worry about himself and worry about the three Hebrew. But he says, oh, by the way, don't do anything yet. I know what you were ordered to do, and this is powerful. Arioch has a mandate from Nebuchadnezzar to slaughter these men. Bottom line. He gets his commands from his king. His life is on the line. But Daniel, who has no authority at all, he has no power at all. Daniel says he stays the order. Do I listen to Nebuchadnezzar or listen to Daniel? Arioch, listen to Daniel.
That's right.
This is like Acts 27 when Paul starts giving commands to the head of the ship and starts giving instructions. And he's not even the captain of the boat. In our crisis, when we walk with God, there is a certain authority that we can have. That's supernatural. Arioch actually stayed the order of Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah. He didn't honor the order yet.
No.
Because of what Daniel said. And then was Daniel, okay, don't kill any of these guys yet. Because he could have started slaughtering the guys. Because Arioch could have said, as long as you guys are not killed, it's fine. He says, no one has to die here. Not even those other wise men. No one dies here. He cared. There is a residual peripheral blessing when you're walking with a man of God through a trial, because these guys are not even believers and they're protected, because Daniel says, don't hurt him yet, Arioch. Wait. Then he goes and tells the dream. Good.
It's a missing. I mean, it's mercy here. He has mercy because these guys are going to hear this and they're going to have to realize that there's someone different in them. You know, whoever talks about Daniel 3 is going to see that that doesn't really last long, you know, because in Daniel 3, there's a lot of jealousy.
Absolutely.
You know, these guys aren't bowing before the statue, but that's tomorrow. That is the next podcast.
But if you just showed up in chapter 2, come on, who's this young kid that walks in here? He's like, never mind, he saved my life. Yeah. On the other side of that, he showed me up, and now my job security, job protection, the spirit of Joab, I've got to get rid of the competition. That's exactly what
you're
trying to do.
Well, I think we have to think about, like, in this part of the world, we think anti-Semitism is like new. It's an old wine that people have been drinking for a long, long time.
Well said.
And I'm just thinking that, the people of Israel have been, labeled as a slave class because they were slaves in Egypt and God delivered them. Mm-hmm. And now they're captive again. Mm-hmm. It's like, and I think people think well, we saw how that played out, over the centuries. They brought him out of Egypt. Yeah, he opened the waters for them. But now, they're just like anybody else. And, I'm thinking who are these Hebrews if they know? It's like really God is always opening his witness about who he's communicating to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the oracles of God have come through. You know, we know that at the beginning of the Bible, mm-hmm. a man named Abraham heard mm-hmm. the voice of God and obeyed. And it said he got a covenant promise that the nations of the earth shall be blessed for through your descendants.
Yes.
And this is the descendants of Abraham. Here they are. If Nebuchadnezzar is going to have success, mm-hmm. his only blessing is going to come from what he gets from these people. Mm. And that's the truth. And like, and there's an envy. There's an envy about this, like this privilege
sure.
that God has given to his people to make them priests and king. And I always want to say it that way because okay. I think like here we see the priest nature of Daniel. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let Arioch wipe all these guys out. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. want them to be shown mercy so they can understand that there is a living God who does speak to people on earth.
Amen.
And I am a son of Abraham, and I know that the blessing of Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon really rests upon me. Mm. And Jeremiah said it. You said it yesterday.
Yes.
You said it in the other podcast. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that passage where Jeremiah said, hey, pray for the peace of your city mm-hmm. because its peace is your success.
Yes.
And so we get this same thing. Don't kill these guys. Mm-hmm. And Arioch hustles him into the presence, just like Joseph was hustled, man.
Oh,
Joseph
yeah.
had to get a bath first because yeah. he had been in a prison,
yep.
but he had to change his clothes, get a bath. Then he could go talk to Pharaoh and interpret his dream. And now we see Daniel, he just gets hustled right into the thing. And I like, it's like it's saying, Arioch said, you know, he's going to give you the interpretation. Mm-hmm. And then the king like recast the whole thing. He said, I'm not just looking for the interpretation, Daniel, mm-hmm. you got to tell me the dream and the interpretation. You got to
yes.
give, it's both and, not either yep. or.
Yes,
it's
right.
like you could spout off something. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for the interpretation. I'm looking for you to tell me what I saw.
Mm.
Tell me that you know what I saw, and then I'll understand that you really have a connection with the eternal, right?
Amen. It's like, I like what you said there, that Daniel understood the moment.
Yeah.
He understood it. He understood what was at stake. And what I like was his poise.
Mm,
he didn't overreact when the threat came. He could have said, okay, we're in Babylon because my forefathers didn't walk with God. That was not my fault. I'm walking with God, but yet here I am in Babylon. He could have just said, I did not put myself here. This is unfair. Okay, once again, now I'm going to be killed once again because of what is beyond my control. But he had poise. Yes, Arioch, the right questions. He went to God like you should do. And when he went to God, guess what happened? God was faithful. Okay, now I'm going to walk in the faithfulness of God and I'm going to see the platform.
Mm.
In the crisis, there's a moment when you have a platform to reveal Christ.
Yeah.
Right? There's two things you're going to do in a crisis. You're going to know God. And then God, in your knowing God, will give you a platform to make him known. It might be a small window. It might be a very big window, but he will give you a window. And here is his window. Like this goes back to the chapter 1, verse 17. Here is the window of making him known. And he doesn't miss the moment. He doesn't miss it. And I like the way he doesn't miss it because when the prayers were answered, he didn't miss the moment.
No.
God was faithful. Worship him. Okay. Now, before I give it to you, I'm not just going to give it to you, but you watch it carefully. He doesn't really start getting into the interpretation for a while.
No, you're right.
He starts pontificating.
He's got to talk about the character of God first,
yeah,
right?
He's kind of like a cartoon villain. He starts monologuing for a good season there. He's like, yes. And he starts talking about God. And everybody in the room is now subject. He has the room. He's like Peter in Acts chapter 2. He's like Paul in Acts 17. He's got the room. So he says, I'm going to talk about God. He's a preacher with a microphone. So he's going for it. He's like, okay, I'm in here. And by the way, there's no other person you can know but God. And by the way, there's no one else who has the answers but Jesus. And by he just goes on. I'm paraphrasing there, but he goes on and on to talk about the glory of God and the wisdom of God and the only source of wisdom in a room full of supposedly wise men. He's like, oh, by the way, those guys, they're not the source of wisdom. My God is. He doesn't even point to himself. He points to God.
Yeah, the God. There is a God in heaven.
There it is.
And he's saying, like, you know, it's not in me. Mm-hmm. He said, are you able? And he said, no wise man can do this, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries and may known some. And the thing is I think this is also Daniel sort of showing his submission to the secular throne that he's under right here, this pagan throne. He's saying, you know, there's a God in heaven and he has chosen you to see something. He said, you are not one of us. You know, he doesn't say that in so many words, but he is saying, like, you know, there is a God in heaven and he chooses whosoever he wills to choose to give information to. And you have gotten something particularly important about the future of creation, the world, the earth. Life on earth has been communicated to you, how it's going to go over the thing. And I don't think he did it to build up Nebuchadnezzar. I think it was just, like you said, he knew the room.
Yep.
He's testifying to the room that, yeah, you guys might, you know, you might be able to, you know, put together a crossword puzzle, fill in the blanks a little bit.
Sudoku. And,
you know, yeah, you know, win a Wheel of Fortune prize or something like that
because,
you know,
the wheel.
But, you know, really, when it comes down to these things that God is communicating, he has chosen Nebuchadnezzar to receive this dream, and he has chosen me to see the dream and to tell what it means. And so we're talking about God's sovereignty here. And Ken, you know, I'm reading in my Bible reading, I'm in that part where Solomon is building the temple, and I'm taking note of, here's Solomon. We know Solomon is the son of an adulteress, and we know that David is the is connected to a Moabitess. And then I'm seeing, like, the variety of, like, there's a half breed who's, like, you know, he's part Israel, but he's part somebody else, and he designs all the bronze pieces. And I'm seeing, and the king of Tyre floats the wood down. I'm just seeing, like, you know, God is not, you know, Israel got a particular privilege of receiving the oracles of God and giving us the Messiah by genetics, but, you know, it's not that they were to be the top dog. It's to be the servants of the world. That's why I'm saying priests and kings.
Nice.
Because priests make an offering speaking to God for the people that are before them. And Daniel speaks to Arioch, don't kill those guys. And that's really priest-like for him.
Absolutely.
And now he's going to go into this room and say, I know that there's a God who speaks, and he spoke to you. And this is, like, you know, really international mission and vision has always been a part of the program of God.
Love it.
I chose Abraham to bless the whole world, to bless the whole world, not to just bless this one tiny piece of the world. And, you know, that's the way, you know, it's a testing process. Like, people are envious because God chose this people, and these people can be arrogant because God chose this people. So the people of God can be arrogant because God gave them these things, and the people of who are not of Abraham can say, well, we're envious because we didn't get what God gave. But that, people miss the whole point, that this is what God is trying to communicate. And so God is communicating through Daniel to a heathen king the process of history that's coming forth, right?
You're right about that, in the sense that God is using Daniel to show Nebuchadnezzar, this is bigger than just you and your kingdom.
Yeah.
This is me trying to, number one, speak to my people to bring them back by using the remnant in Daniel and show them in their hearts that they're far from me. It's your natural wisdom that put you here in captivity to begin with.
Yeah.
Come back to me. Number two, the world, stop looking for wisdom outside of me. Come to me, right? Everything is, all roads lead to me, right?
Yeah.
And human history is cataclysmically involved in God's will and God's plan. And I'm going to weave this together, which is why Daniel was a tremendous historical book.
Yeah.
Even though it's not in the historical books, it's a tremendous historical book, because it's the perfect meld, more than any other Old Testament book. It's the perfect meld between the history of man and God's divine plan, and how it's weaved together. It's a great, great book, and you see the beginning of the weaving starting to happen right here. We see threads here in chapter 2 in this first dream, this first huge dream. And let's get to the dream. This is where the story starts running fast. The car speeds up.
I think the dream is amazing. I mean, we're going to talk me and you get, we're DreamWorks. We're the DreamWorks guys, because we're going to talk next week, next Tuesday.
Yep, Daniel
our
7.
Next there's a podcast of Daniel 7. That's the other dream. And so we're talking about, this is Nebuchadnezzar. He's a man of the earth.
Okay.
And so he's going to, this is the way people see human government.
Okay.
And so that's the way I see it. Like, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So we know the process, right? You can go through it. There's gold and silver going down the list, right?
Right.
Human governments.
Mm-hmm. Now, normally you look at this through human governments, but let's go a different road. Let's drive a different car. Instead of walking through this, the elements here, we see interpretively that Daniel's pointing out that there's going to be different governments, and he talks about this in verses 36 through 45. But in these governments is the mind and the nature of man.
Yes, that's it. But they're looking at, you know, that's the way they view it.
Right.
Man has always been trying to figure out the ultimate human government.
Yes.
Whether it's the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. whether it's, I think that's one thing. I don't want to say USA, but it is like I've read something about, that somebody wrote that, he's not particularly a believer, but he wrote that, the U.S. Constitution is one of the only documents on earth that seems to take account the depravity of man in trying to form a government.
Wow.
Like, so rather than like centralizing like a golden head, mm-hmm. like here we see golden heads make mm-hmm. everything work.
Yep.
Here they're saying there is no golden head mm-hmm. and like whatever manner of spirituality that was in the founding mm-hmm. the founding people of the United States, they mm-hmm. they crafted a constitution that this essayist said is like it's the only one that we know of that takes human depravity into account and divides things. Mm-hmm. So when man looks at government, he's always trying to find the golden head.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's sort of what this whole thing so go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
You're going. We're together on this. It's like, okay, this is a picture of mankind. You see, at the top is its most valuable self-interest, which is gold.
Yeah.
But as the metals, as we move down the statue, the value of the metals decreases.
Yes.
But what actually happens as the value decreases, the material hardens until you get to the stone and clay. It hardens. The silver is harder than gold. Bronze is harder than silver. Iron is harder than bronze. And then when you get to the bottom, that hardness ultimately works against you.
Yeah.
Because in the human heart, I have this self-value system of I'm gold, I know what I'm doing, and then maybe I don't know as much as what I thought. I'm not as valuable as I thought I was. It's not what I thought I could be. Meanwhile, the less I discover how strong I am, the harder my heart gets, and my heart gets harder. So as my heart gets harder, as I walk through life and discover that my life is not what I thought it was, I end up at the bottom with feet in clay. I realize that this image I have of who I am, self-sufficiency, self-orientation, and self-realization, I realize it's just iron and clay.
Yeah,
it's a mixed multitude. It's divided. It's weakened. It's fractured, and it will fall. And that is the place where the stone, the rock of Christ, strikes.
Yeah.
It doesn't strike me at my golden position. I'm too proud for that. But he hits me at my iron and clay where I come to the cross and I die. And that's where the stone comes in and hits me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not who I thought I was. I don't have it all together. I'm not smart. I'm not strong. I'm not clever. I'm not wise. I'm not able. I'm not the golden head I thought it was. I thought I was. I'm not the silver that maybe people thought I was. I'm not the bronze. I'm not the iron. I'm actually the iron and the clay.
Yeah.
I'm not as even hard as I thought I was. I'm weak.
Yeah.
The stone strikes us at the weakest part of our life. What's the verse in Luke that either you fall on the rock or the rock falls on you? Here it is.
You either are broken or crushed.
That's it. And here, God breaks the statue because he won't fall otherwise.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And I think a good meditation when you read this is to go to Psalm 2, because it says what the heathen rage. I look at that as the iron. There's a rage mm-hmm. and we see it. You know, we see rage manifesting itself in headlines all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, And then we also see the other part of it. And then the heathen imagine a vain thing. Mm-hmm. Why do the heathen rage? And then why do they imagine a vain thing? Well, I think they work together. It's mm-hmm. like there's an iron, like you said, there's mm-hmm. a rage, there's a strength. Everyone wants to muscle up and hammer something. And then how do you sort of like soothe the savage beast? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like it's a, imagine vain things. It's like music can soothe the savage beast. It's like that, mm-hmm. you know, and there is some truth to that because we know that when David played for Saul, mm-hmm. the evil spirit was driven away from mm-hmm. the mind of Saul. So we understand that, but this is like you said, the iron and the clay, the rage, we're trying to put the rage in a box.
Yes.
And sometimes in the box, it could be intellectual, philosophical, it could be artistic, mm-hmm. but it's all working as a way to avoid the mountain.
Yep.
The stone that's going to break everything and blow away everything is the rock who is Christ, right? That's the
Absolutely.
Ultimate. Don't you think that's the ultimate story that Nebuchadnezzar has to learn?
Yeah, he has to get that. And I think that's what Daniel's giving him. Like, there's only one way.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole point of mankind and the whole point of you and the greatest kingdom at the time, which represents mankind, is that you need the rock.
Yeah.
The gold could speak of the pride of man. Mm-hmm. The silver could speak of the natural wisdom of man.
Exactly.
The bronze could speak of the natural plans of man. The iron could speak of the rage because my plans don't work. And then the iron and clay could be the broken life because the plan didn't work and I've got angry about it and I'm frustrated about it. So then the stone comes in. The stone that maybe I rejected when I was in the gold, I rejected that stone.
Yeah.
That very same stone comes in at the foot of the cross and breaks me.
Yeah.
It breaks me down. It hits me in the place where I'm most receptive.
Yep.
Right? The way I can receive the most. And upon that reception in the rock,
yeah,
I can be a great mountain That's in
right.
Christ.
That's right. And again, to go to Psalm 2, how does it end? Kiss the sun.
That's it.
That's right. Kiss the sun. Mm-hmm. And it's like this is, and we know that, you know, when we read through the Bible, we understand this thing about kissing. It is like of submission. Mm-hmm. Kiss the sun. Do mm-hmm. you realize who your rock is mm-hmm. and who is eternal? And I love the confidence of Daniel really shows itself in the way he concludes. The dream is certain and the interpretation is sure. It's like I didn't cut up a chicken to see the gizzard and try and get this, you know, all kinds of thing. Look at the, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't shake two sticks at anything like that. Mm-hmm. No. This came directly from God. Just like Paul said. He said, when he's talking to the Galatians, he's saying, I did not preach to you cleverly devised fables. I got something from God. This mm-hmm. is a revelation. Mm-hmm. The revelation of the finished work and the fact that you live by Christ. I live by Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That where did I get that from? I didn't get that from, you know, my own interpretation. I got that directly from the Son. Mm. But I just think like, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, here's the big thing. Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face.
That's it.
He fell on his face. It's like that. You know, the dream is certain and its interpretation is sure. And Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face. Now you got the royal golden king is seeing himself in the right light for this moment anyway.
And it, once again, just like in chapter 1, the story ends where Daniel goes from bad to great. He has one of those Joseph turnarounds, one of those Ruth turnarounds where everything is looking dark and blurry like a Hollywood movie. But then suddenly at the end, ta-da, he's amazing. God's amazing. But only caveat, notice he worshiped Daniel.
Yeah, that's the not God.
Yeah, somehow he swung but didn't quite get it. Yeah. But it's like a swing and it's like, okay.
There's more to come in the story.
Yeah, we're not done yet. You didn't get the lesson.
Yeah.
And by the way, God's patient. You have the idea. At least you're humble. You're sincere, but you still miss the point.
Yeah.
You know, don't worship me. Like when Paul was, Peter said it and Paul said it. Yeah. Both times in Acts when miracles happened, people tried to worship Peter. People tried to worship Paul. They both said, no, it's God. That wouldn't work today. Many preachers today worship me. But Daniel, Peter, and Paul said, it's God, right? And at some point, Daniel does get there. But it's interesting that even in the midst of this tremendous interpretation that we gave an application to, even in this tremendous interpretation, he still misses the point.
Exactly.
He's brilliant. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's capable. He's just not very spiritual.
Not yet. Not yet.
But
stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Come, subscribe to the podcast. You'll get more through the rest of the week.
Coming attractions.
One last thing I want to say. You said those guys like Paul and Peter both, stop people from worshiping them. But then when we get to Revelation, we see twice that an angel, this is like the answer to Lucifer.
That's right.
An angel, John falls to, and the angel, like, it's a shout. It's like, don't do that. I am a servant of you and those who serve the spirit of prophecy. The spirit of prophecy is Christ Jesus.
Amen.
And that's the whole thing. Okay, friends. Well, we've set you up for exercise going through Daniel this week and next week on our podcast, The Grace Hour Show. Thank you for being a part of it today. I want to thank Pastor Ronaldo Brown. We have a good time doing this.
Good to go.
I'm Pastor Steve Androlonis. Today, our engineer has been Jehu Vandiver. We're thankful for that, too. Thank you for him. And remember, you can subscribe on several platforms. You can find those out, Spotify and others, and be a part of the Grace Hour as much as possible. Thank you so much. And remember, we are praying all this week. Come by at 7 o'clock tonight if you'd like and have a prayer with our body here as we're preparing for a vision for next summer. Thank you, everybody. This is the Grace Hour Show. Have a great afternoon and a great week. God bless.